Jason Burmes on today's News Talk TNT.
Hey, good evening if you're in the U.S. Good morning if you're overseas. This is Joe Hoff sitting in for Jason again tonight. Happy to be here, and lots going on. We've got a couple great guests tonight. It's going to be a great show for the next actual 2 hours. So thanks for being with us. Sit back, relax, and prepare yourself. We've got all sorts of stuff to talk about, some personal notes, and a lot of news that's going on in the U.S. today. All sorts of news. We don't even know where to start. So right now, I think I'm going to start with this big hearing in front of the Supreme Court today, the SCOTUS. It was President Trump's case where he is arguing that the president has immunity while he is president for his official acts. This is something that's been in place for the last 234 years of our country, and yet the Democrats are trying to go after Trump, Jack Smith, Biden, Obama, and the deep state for acts that he took while he was president. Listen to this piece. This is coming. It's a guy by the name of John Sowers. He's from St. Louis, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him after you hear this this argument. But this is really how it started off today in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's listen to this.
Presidency as we know it. For 234 years of American history, no president was ever prosecuted for his official acts. The framers of our Constitution viewed an energetic executive as essential to securing liberty. If a president can be charged, put on trial, and imprisoned for his most controversial decisions as soon as he leaves office, that looming threat will distort the president's decision-making precisely when bold and fearless action is most needed. Every current president will face de facto blackmail and extortion by his political rivals while he is still in office. The implications of the court's decision here extend far beyond the facts of this case. Could President George W. Bush have been sent to prison for obstructing an official proceeding or allegedly lying to Congress to induce war in Iraq? Could President Obama be charged with murder for killing U.S. citizens abroad by drone strike? Could President Biden someday be charged with unlawfully inducing immigrants to enter the country illegally for his border policies? The answer to all these questions is no. Prosecuting the president for his official acts is an innovation with no foothold in history or tradition and incompatible with our constitutional structure. The original meaning of
there it is. A fantastic piece there by John Sowers. I wanted to tell you, the reason I bring that up, not just because this is one of the most important cases in U.S. history, it's can you prosecute a president for his acts while he's president? And the problem is we never have. And the problem is if you do, as Sowers argues, then everything the president does, he's going to be very, very careful because he's going to be scared. He's going to be sued by his political enemies either while president or after president. It's certainly going to impact his ability to carry out his duties as the president of the United States. Incredible argument. There was some great discussions going back and forth. The Democrats say, well, President Trump did this because he wanted to steal the election. Well, they don't know that. That was his duty as president, in my opinion. I've written 3 books on the 2020 election. I know, based on my background, that the 2020 election was absolutely stolen. And I can say that because the election never should have been certified. There was too many findings. Our laws are in place to protect us from things like this, and they didn't get done. And President Trump had every right to step in and say, hey, we need to look at this. What they argue is that President Trump doesn't have that right, or if he does do things like that, that they're going to suggest he meant to personally benefit himself. But somebody argued later in the day, everything the president does benefits himself. Name one thing that they can't. And then another argument was, well, he could bring in the attorney general. The attorney general could rule. And one of the Supreme Court justices said, well, so the president just brings in some clown that'll let him do anything. I mean, that isn't an argument. The case, it looks really solid for President Trump. It's going to end up throwing out a few of these Jack Smith cases. And Jack Smith is, in my opinion, just an absolute crook and criminal. And I want to tell you something about Mr. Sowers, who presented that. I know his family. I know his family personally. His brother, Fred, is a good friend of my brother, my twin brother, Jim's. And when my brother Jim was sick 10 years ago, I flew back from Hong Kong to St. Louis to spend with him. We didn't know if he was going to make it or not. Very serious situation. And Fred showed up. Fred and his dad loved Jim. They showed up and prayed with Jim at his bedside. That is Mr. Sauer's family. That's the family that he comes from. He's a good man, and he's fighting for America. And we're fighting not just for this president. We're fighting for this country. This is the rule of law. We cannot destroy the presidential executive position because some lunatics want to come after you. We can't do that. So I want to let you know, Mr. Sauer, his family are the cream of the crop. They're the best people you've ever met. They're good people. I know them personally. Fred was also the head of his class, I believe, at Harvard, at least one of the top individuals, a Rhodes Scholar, a very sharp guy, and he's behind the Missouri and Louisiana court case going against the government, where the government is behind censoring conservatives like myself and the Gateway Pundit. So we're going to talk more about the Gateway Pundit in the next hour, because there's some big news overnight there. You can Google it. And we'll mention a few things about that in the next hour. I'm sure you're anxious to hear what I have to say about that. But instead, let's just take a quick break and remind you that TNT, we are grateful you're here, and to come and visit us on our website, etc., to see some of the best news out there anywhere in the world.
Abroad or at home, this is your news.
By staying silent, we are part of the problem.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, lots going on today. A good friend who I haven't seen in some times, looking good, shaved, really handsome, nice tie. We're going to introduce to you, Adam Clark has got a great piece that he wants to share with me, shared it with me before the show. Adam, what's going on?
Hi, Joe. Long time no chat, my friend. I decided to bring you this interesting story. I don't know about you, but have you noticed a lot of the big names and news and headlines and events around us seem like a lot of things that were taking place exactly 4 years ago? Interesting to note, the story I'm about to discuss is no exception. In case you missed it, on Thursday, an appellate court, a court of appeals in New York, has overturned the rape convictions from 2020 of none other than disgraced former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. That's right. In February of 2020, in case you just woke up from a coma, Mr. Weinstein was convicted of first-degree criminal sexual assault in connection with former Project Runway production assistant Miriam Haley, and third-degree rape in connection with once-aspiring actress Jessica Mann. Though acquitted of three other charges, Weinstein was ultimately sentenced to 23 years in prison. Haley and Mann both testified at trial, but they were not the only alleged victims to do so. This was at the height of the whole, this had contributed to this whole phenomenon of everyone sharing a now well-known hashtag, Me Too. In case you missed that as well. So Weinstein ultimately was not charged with any crimes against these women, but all of these witnesses, tons of witnesses, helped establish the defendant's pattern of behavior. His defense team still had not cross-examined those witnesses based on their allegations of sexual misconduct. In appealing Weinstein's convictions, his lawyers argued that the testimony and cross-examination of the Molyneux witnesses was unfairly prejudicial against the defendant. So they're arguing that the ones who were just used to help establish his pattern of behavior was kind of mishandled. The New York Appeals Court has agreed. In a narrow 4-3 decision, the court ruled to overturn the convictions in this case. The appeals court claimed that Judge James Burke, who oversaw Weinstein's trial, made a quote-unquote error, a critical one, according to him, in allowing testimony that was, quote, irrelevant, prejudicial, and untested allegations of prior bad acts, end quote. The majority also seemed to take aim against Molyneux witnesses more broadly, claiming that, quote, the accused has a right to be held to account only for the crime charged, and thus allegations of prior bad acts may not be admitted against them for the sole purpose of establishing their propensity for criminality. Furthermore, quote, at trial, a defendant stands to account for the crimes as charged. Proof of prior crimes and uncharged bad acts are the rare exception to this fundamental rule of criminal law, end quote. The three dissenting judges addressed the issue of the quote-unquote Molyneux witnesses directly, lamenting that this ruling could ultimately bring the use of Molyneux witnesses in sexual assault cases to a swift end. But the minority justices especially took issue with the majority's, quote, fundamental misunderstandings of sexual violence, end quote, committed by a powerful men, plural, sorry. In fact, the minority practically insulted their panel colleagues, suggesting in their dissenting opinion that the majority may not actually strive for justice in sexual assault cases. This is a panel of women, quote, by ignoring evidence of defendants' manipulation and premeditation, which clouded issues of intent, and by failing to recognize that the jury was entitled to consider Weinstein's previous assaults, this court has continued a disturbing trend of overturning juries' guilty verdicts in cases involving sexual violence, end quote. That's the dissenting opinion. Judah Engelmeyer, a spokesperson for Weinstein, claimed to be, quote unquote, cautiously excited about the ruling, but also noted that Weinstein, quote, still has a long road ahead of him, end quote. Oh, indeed he does, Joe. Just for starters, the overturned convictions do not let Weinstein, who's now 72, off the hook for the alleged assaults against Haley and Mann. It just means he's going to have a new trial. That's if none other than everybody's favorite Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg opts to retry him. Mr. Bragg claims he will so long as the victims agree to testify again. He said, Mr. Bragg did, quote, we will do everything in our power to retry this case and remain steadfast in our commitment to survivors of sexual assault, end quote. Furthermore, Weinstein still remains behind bars because he was convicted of rape and sexual assault in 2022 in a separate case in Los Angeles. He is sentenced to serve 16 years for those crimes. So, Joe, here we are. I mean, I seen headlines and people musing whether or not this disgusting man is going to get out of prison. Meanwhile, they're doing everything they can to put the former president in prison. But what say you, my friend?
Yeah, it's like a long lost story that we've forgotten about for a long time. The Me Too movement ended when Joe Biden was running for president and Hunter Biden was caught with all these hookers. So. That ended. No more did anybody seem to care about what men did with women, and so it's just nastiness. And like you said there at the end, what's the big deal? He's going to stay in prison. So, another crazy case in New York City. And I'd bet with Bragg, he's probably going to let him go. And that's the way it is. That's how the New York. DOJ and that DA Bragg seem to run this case against President Trump is an absolute travesty. Every day we're learning more and more. It is an absolute joke. It never should have been brought forward. And yet this thing's moving forward. And they had to bring in the DOJ top guy to work for Bragg to run that case. So they probably won't do the same thing with Weinstein. I'll just tell you that. And it's all about get Trump. So I don't know why this is coming up right now, other than maybe just a matter of timing. But so many things seem to be planned anymore. You don't know. But you're right. Now, the other thing that's kind of coming up now more than anything, Adam, is these riots across the U.S. as well, starting to remind us of 2020 and the BLM riots. So, and quite frankly, I believe some of the same people are funding those individuals. So we're going to get some deja vu here. I guess we'll see if we come up with another COVID or what else happens. But we don't know, do we?
Yeah, there's also this other one, too. I was like, wait a minute, this is getting weird. The argument over whether or not they're going to ban TikTok. That same thing was going on under President Trump during the last presidential. You know, this is everything is a repeat of like 4 years ago. It's really, really getting weird, my friend. So to your point about the timing of the Harvey Weinstein thing, considering how the news and places, social media platforms and AI chatbots depend on like words, keywords, you look at a lot of the same keywords that are being discussed in the story about Weinstein and they kind of align to similar ones involving Trump. Just saying.
Well, you know, that's the point. That's the point exactly. That's why they're bringing it up now, because this case against Trump is about 34 counting activities. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with Stormy Daniels, basically. They just want to shove Stormy Daniels in front of the American people and say, she had this affair, and I'm hearing, I heard the other day, Adam, that they're going to come up and they're going to say that Stormy Daniels' sex with President Trump, Citizen Trump at the time, wasn't even consensual. She's going to claim that she was raped. So this is all, it does now seem to make more sense. This is the scheme that's going on. Throw this dirty, nasty stuff out there and throw President Trump right in the middle of it. And it's all a scam and a lie. It's so disgusting what these guys are willing to do anymore. It's just appalling. America, we need Trump, and we need to get this stuff fixed, because our DOJ right now is disgusting. It's a propaganda machine. Adam, thanks for joining us. A very relevant post, and I guess we'll see you here maybe in the next hour, but good to see you again.
Yeah.
Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, you too, Drew. Yeah, I'll talk to you in the second hour, okay?
Yeah, great. And we'll be back here right after this.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
As soon as we started our descent, everywhere I could see was mud, just absolutely mud.
You know, the country has been in prolonged drought so long, it was like a tinderbox waiting to go up.
Okay, very heavy. Each of us wants to be part of the solution, and we can be. Remember that there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit, and we have all four of your cats.
Okay.
And around the world. For any animal in any disaster. So let's focus on that, right? Be part of the solution, one rescue at a time. Search ifa.org/disaster ready.
It's been said that when someone you love has Parkinson's, you have Parkinson's. The truth is, Parkinson's disease doesn't just affect the diagnosed. It affects everyone who supports and helps care for them. Worldwide, over 10 million people are living with Parkinson's, a neurological disease that affects movement. And with so many places to search for information, it can be difficult to know where to begin. The Parkinson's Foundation has answers. Answers for everyone in the fight. We can help you understand the disease, help you find expert care, give you tips for living a better life, share the latest research, help you find local support, and there's a free helpline you can call. Find your answers and join us in the fight against Parkinson's. To learn more, please go to parkinson.org or call 1-800-4PD-INFO. The Parkinson's Foundation. Better lives together.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTRadio.live.
Hey, this is Joe Hoft. We are back here filling in for Jason tonight. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Appreciate you being here. This is a great channel that's really showing around the world, and it's growing and it's exciting. So appreciate you being here. One thing I wanted to bring up before we bring on our guest is some news in the United States with my name in it, and I thought you might be interested in my take and what I can share based on what my attorneys have shared with me and my brother. But there was a big article or a big event that had came out last night at the Gateway Pundit, where my brother is the founder, where I've, as many of you know, have written for years there, and have been very effective there. By the way, when I came back in 2020, we were getting about 500,000 hits a day at the Gateway Pundit. Within 10 months, we were up to 5 million hits a day. And so it was really, it's really been a very effective and prominent media source in the United States. And so anyways, what happened today is some news with the Gateway Pundit. My brother Jim has filed for bankruptcy, Chapter 11. This is in reaction to being sued by not only Protect Democracy and Yale Law School attorneys representing a couple individuals out of Georgia from the 2020 election who claimed that we defamed them. But in addition to that, there's a lawsuit in Colorado against the Gateway Pundit, where this individual by the name of Coomer, who worked at Dominion, claims that he was defamed as well by the Gateway Pundit. He and the Gateway Pundit in that case is aligned with about 15 other people, including Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and more. Our case in Georgia, Rudy Giuliani just had his case heard, a similar case in D.C. He wasn't even allowed a jury or even a trial. The Obama judge ruled that Rudy wasn't complying with the request from the team, the gang of Obama attorneys that were after him, along with, I believe, Yale Law School was involved in that as well. And an Obama judge sentenced Rudy then and found him guilty without a trial, and then ended up sentencing him with or making a verdict of him having a penalty of $148 million that he's to pay Ruby and Shay, the mother-daughter team in Georgia that were there the night of the election, after hours with no observers there, shoving ballots through tabulators. This is what Jim and I reported at the Gateway Pundit. And we determined that it wasn't just shoving them single stacks through. Some stacks they shoved through multiple times. That's illegal. You can't count a ballot or a vote more than once in the United States. That's against the law. I believe it's a felony. And we had that and we reported on that. And because of that, we've been sued. So that came out today and last night that the Gateway Pundit has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And we have been one of the most effective conservative sites on the internet. I mentioned we were at 5 million hits a day after the election because we were one of the few people that were laying this out. My background, as many of you know, is in finance and audit. I spent 20 years or 30 years, decades in this field. I was overseas as an international executive, overseeing an audit team, been to audit committees around the world. And when I saw this election, it was a mess and I was at the right place, right time. And we were destroying this narrative that this was a fair and safe and free election. And I've written three books about it that support everything I've said. And anyways, last night, unfortunately, Gateway Pundit found it the best action now is to file for bankruptcy. It's in the news, my name, along with Jim's and the Gateway Pundit. And I just want you to know that we're going to continue to report the truth. We're not going to let these people stop us. And this is stuff that's been going on, I believe, for years. If you share the truth, you get attacked. And nobody better to share this story with and to hear his story than Lord Conrad Black, who's with us right now. Welcome to the Jason Burma Show. This is Joe Hoft, Lord Black. I'm not even sure how to address you. I'm sorry. Conrad. But thank you for being here.
Yeah, no, well, thanks for inviting me. Look, that Chapter 11 is actually a very good remedy for you because you get rid of this nonsense quickly. They don't get any substantial award, and the judge lets you run your company. And as soon as you've got rid of it, you can refinance it and drive on. So yeah, you're doing exactly the right. And Rudy Giuliani will be back on his feet soon, too. I mean, assessing $148 million against a man who spent his entire career in the Justice Department and then as mayor of New York is just ludicrous.
Yeah, ludicrous. I have met one other lord in my lifetime, and when I was at an audit committee in the UK, and he was, and I can't remember his name right now, but it's a real honor to have you today with us. It's really special, and I understand you were in for a long period of time the media industry as well.
I was, yeah. I know we had one of the largest newspaper companies in the world. We had the London Daily Telegraph and Sunday Telegraph, The Spectator, over 100 daily newspapers in the United States, most of them quite small, but the Chicago Sun-Times was the largest one. It's, of course, a big newspaper. We had the majority of the daily newspapers in Canada, including the National Post, which I founded. We had the Sydney Morning Herald and Melbourne Age in Australia, and the Australian Financial Review and the Jerusalem Post. We had a lot of papers over a wide area.
One of the largest media companies at the time in the world,
Is
that correct?
We weren't as big as these multimedia operations like Time Warner or News Corporation or something. But as a straight newspaper company, we were one of the largest. Yes,
and very successful. And Ben, you have a history where you there were some charges that were raised against you. Are you willing to kind of share a little bit about that? Because I understand there might be a connection with President Trump with all of this, and I'm a big fan of President Trump. So perhaps you, if you don't mind, I'd love to hear the story.
No, I'll do it. I had a longtime partner who engaged in a related party transaction. He misinformed the directors, including me, and disguised the extent to which he himself was really the buyer. And we had some disgruntled institutional shareholders who claimed that we were paying ourselves too much, even though the great majority of the shareholders supported us. They asked for a special committee, and since I had no reason whatever to doubt that there was anything the special committee would discover that was worrisome, I said, fine, I'll have a special committee. This special committee came up with the fact I just mentioned that my longtime associate had pulled a fast one on us. So they confronted him with this, including a threat of prosecution, whereupon he engaged in this, in my opinion, absolutely barbarous American practice of the plea bargain, whereby he said, look here, I will give you evidence to bring Black and others down. I was the head of the company and the big shareholder, you see. If you give me a bit of a holiday on this, you see. So he pleaded and got, I think, 1 year in a real sort of country club facility in Canada. It was American offense, but it's worked out that he would serve in Canada and near where his family lived. And then we had to go through this spurious trial where they threw everything at us, and it was just nonsense. And in my own case, I had 17 counts, 4 were dropped. You know, they throw all the spaghetti at the wall, RICO, right, and money laundering, like complete nonsense, you know, in my case. We got rid of 9 of them at trial, and the Supreme Court of the United States vacated the others. So, but it remanded back in this peculiar American way to a lower court, the responsibility of, in the words of the late Madam Justice Ginsburg, who wrote the decision for a unanimous Supreme Court, to contemplate the errors of their ways, and in particular, the infirmity of invented law. And the Supreme Court declared the statute under which we were charged to be ultra vires to the United States Congress and unconstitutional. But the lower court, to try and preserve any sort of a tissue of plausibility to this outrageous prosecution, retrieved 2 counts. Although the trial judge had dismissed one as a clerical error by one of my co-defendants, and the place of initiating jurisdiction had declared the other to be no offense at all and not subject to a charge. So I'd already served the sentence by this time, but we were stuck with these two convictions. And then some friends of mine requested a pardon for me from President Trump, and Alan Dershowitz was acting for me, and he explained it to the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, and the White House legal office looked into it very carefully and concluded that none of us should ever have been charged and any guilty findings were unjust. So I won in the end, but it took 15 years and it cost me most of my money. So it was a pretty tough business, you know?
Oh, it's terrible, isn't it? I think that's the we use the term lawfare now in the United States.
Yeah, it's using law in a corrupt way to conduct a war of attrition against someone you disagree with.
Right. Now, I talked to Roger Stone this week. He's now got 11 cases against him.
Like, I'm a bit eccentric, but I like him. And he was another one who was persecuted.
Yeah. Yeah, he likes me because when I was writing at the Gateway Pundit, I would constantly write about Roger because he had a gag order on him, and he wasn't allowed to say anything by this corrupt Obama judge, Judge Amy Berman Jackson. I think she's just demonic personally. The things she did to him, the evidence they wouldn't let him share. It comes out on election night.
After they reenacted the invasion of Normandy at his house. I mean, a man and his wife, their 70s, and the family cat. He didn't even have a passport, and they landed by land, sea, and air at 6 a.m., having tipped off CNN to take pictures of the whole thing. As Roger Counsel said, if you had just said you were indicting him, I we would have come down and made our appearance and entered our plea.
Right.
It's just disgusting. I mean, despite everything done to me, I'm pro-American because I recognize what America's achieved and how important it is to the world, but it is an evil law system. I mean, you have 5% of the world's population and 25% of its incarcerated people, 98% conviction rate in federal cases, 95% of those without a trial. It's just a conveyor belt to the corrupt prison system.
Amen. I haven't recognized that until really more so the last few years. And I think, it's you know, now I see it all. And Roger didn't have a voice, and we'd write about him and what this nasty judge was doing. On November 3rd of 2020, on the election night, the DOJ released some documents per a FOIA request that said basically Roger Stone did nothing wrong. They were claiming that he knew that Russia was going to send documents to WikiLeaks. The whole thing was garbage. It was made up, and the Mueller exam knew it. The judge knew it because she reviewed the Mueller exam and said, there's nothing there for you, Roger. Forced him and sent him to prison, basically. He was sentenced to prison. And
he was only in prison for a few weeks, wasn't he?
Yeah, I don't even know if he went, but because of COVID. But he ended up getting sentenced, and there was this evidence that exonerated him. And sure. Even after that, she kept the gag order on him. So I've been a good friend of Roger's. He's thanked me for that. And he shared with me this week that this whole case in New York is just basically his case was the trial run for this New York case with the DA in Manhattan. They're doing the same
thing. It's an absolute shambles. I mean, the Bragg case, it's rubbish. Yes. It's going nowhere. It is so rotten. I think that the former president will be acquitted, even though presumably the majority of jurors didn't vote for him. I mean, they have no case at all. They can't identify.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's an aggregation of two very dubious charges of a minor misdemeanor and adding them together and claiming, despite the Limitations Act, that constituted the violation of a federal law, which is, has absolutely nothing to do with the district attorney, by the way, and asking for a criminal conviction on that. I mean, I do not exaggerate the talents of American jurors. I never underestimate the outright evil of American prosecutors. But this is so preposterous, I don't think they have any chance of getting a conviction. Even this latest thing that they will not give notice to the defense counsel of the witnesses that the prosecution will call the next day. Now, I would have thought that alone, and you can get it pitched on appeal, but I think they are now so panicky. They see Biden sinking in the polls. They're so desperate. They're gambling everything on getting a conviction, even though they'd be throwing out an appeal.
You're absolutely right. And
very much look today in the Supreme Court that at the least they're going to hold this until the last day in June and then give qualified immunity to the president. So they're not going to get a trial on that nonsense before the election.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's why they're pushing Bragg.
Even more, I'm sorry to be filibustering you here, but they are even more stupid than they are evil, because they've had 3.5 years to do this. And this rabid lunatic, Jack Smith, left it too late. If he'd launched it a year earlier, they at least could have got to a trial.
Yeah, you're right. And today's hearing in the Supreme Court, it looks like President Trump has immunity, had presidential immunity.
Well,
that's going to kill Smith's cases.
You can't give the president immunity if he goes out onto Pennsylvania Avenue and shoots somebody on the sidewalk. He doesn't get immunity for that. But you've got to let him have immunity to act in a normal way as president. Otherwise, president will ever be able to do anything.
That's right. And that's what Trump's team's arguing. I know the family of the guy who was arguing for President Trump today. I mentioned that earlier in the show, the Sowers family. Good Americans, good Christian family out of St. Louis. This guy is bright, arguing for Trump today. And he says, yes, official acts. We've always had this protection.
You see the one with the slightly raspy voice? Yeah. The other the one, I was on Newsmax earlier today, and just sort of slightly overlapping with Alina Haba, you know,
Haba,
another
one,
Trump's counsel, the lady. She's very impressive. I mean, she's a very attractive woman, but apart from that, she's very well spoken.
Right. She's fantastic. And John Sowers, he was, I believe, the head of his class at Harvard. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's leading the Missouri-Louisiana case against the federal government. That also involves me and the Gateway Pundit, where we were being censored by our government through our depositions and subpoenas. We found that the government is paying entities to censor conservative media like ours. Because it's unbelievable the stuff that's going on, and Sowers is a big part of that case as well. So he's a good American patriot, and I think he did a fine job today arguing on behalf of the president that official acts are off limits, and President Trump had every right, in my opinion, to argue this election shouldn't be certified. That's my analysis after years in auditing. I never would have certified this if it was somebody's financials. No way. No way. It was a mess.
You know, where you send out unsolicited 81 million ballots on voters lists that are always about 10% inaccurate anyway, with people moving and dying and so on. And the millions and millions of harvested ballots, no verification, and just dumped in drop boxes in the middle of the night after the election. No scrutinization whatsoever. Just like picking up your mail in the morning. You have no idea who put it through the slot in your door, you know? I mean, does anyone seriously think that that was done without any fraud? Of course it wasn't. Now, we don't know how much, but of course it wasn't.
Yeah. But of course it was. And that's enough to not certify it and make it right. And that's what we didn't do. And President Trump, I believe, was right. It's a travesty, and jumping back.
I don't know too much about it at that point, but all this wall-to-wall national political media truism, even in News Corporation, the Wall Street Journal and Fox News, that Trump has no complaint and it was a pristine election. I find that in a way even more shocking. I understand that a political party does what it can get away with to get elected. I mean, let's face it, people are like that. We're not saints, you know, and politicians aren't saints. But for the media to say there's no possible grounds for questioning the fairness of this result is just irresponsible. Yeah. No one said that about 1960, when you don't know who won, really. And no one said it about 2000, where at least Al Gore had his day in court. But in this last election, all 19 lawsuits on the constitutionality of, contrary to the Constitution's requirement that the state legislatures change or administer the fairness of federal elections in those states, it was done by executive fiat by the government or by elected partisan state courts. They wouldn't hear any of it, nothing, not even the Supreme Court on the the big case of Texas, you know, where they were suing swing states and they were joined by 19 other states. And the Supreme Court said no. Alito sort of indicated he'd like to hear the argument, but the other judges said no. You know, so I think it's a fact of American history that the courts will not tamper with the apparent result of a federal election. I guess on the grounds that if they did so, it would be just too explosive politically.
Mm-hmm. I think you're spot on everything. It's fantastic analysis. One thing that we learned then is Joe Biden takes over the White House. And to me, I just think, well, I thought the guy was senile from the start. This guy's, you know, he's over the hill. He can't function.
But even in his prime, he was a dolt. I mean, I never forgave him for what he did to Bob Bork. But, you know, he was always a gaffe machine. He never got anything right. He didn't even vote all the people in the National Security Council. He was the one who said, no, let's not try and kill this guy we think is Obama, because he may not be, Bin Laden, Osama Bin Laden, because it may not be him.
Yeah.
As Robert Gates said, he never got anything right.
I agree. And it was, and I think the American people agreed, and all of a sudden he gets 81 million votes and this guy's in, steps into the White House. None of us, our jaws were all on the ground. Like, what's going on? And now we see the results.
The Democratic Party knew that Sanders was too far left for the country. So they said, oh, look, Bernie, we'll take your program, but we're going to put Biden in your place because we can sell him as not being a scary candidate, and they would think you were scary. So Sanders, being a dedicated socialist, said, all right, if you'll put my program in, I'm interested in the dogma of socialism, not advancing myself. He's probably sincere in that. And so that's the deal we got. And as a result, we've had an absolutely terrible administration. After more than 3 years, every single major policy area, they're completely underwater. Immigration, inflation, the green terror, the shambles abroad, and the crime rate. I mean, all of it is a disaster.
It is. You're absolutely right. And I think one thing as well is the economy. We saw today it looks like the economy's slowing down. President Trump made
it's a slowing
statement.
Down even and inflation that, coming back up.
That's right. And the U.S. dollar is in one crazy spot as well. The petrodollar has been destroyed overseas. What are your thoughts on that and the economy?
Well, with regime change, it'll be fine. You cut taxes, cut a lot of expenses that are just doled out to the fiefdoms of the Liberal Party. I should say the Democratic Party. I'm sorry. For a moment, I was imagining I was in Canada, but there are some similarities to problems here, but not these awful legal problems. You put a steady, decisive executive in charge, and you work out a compromise in Ukraine, which could be done quite quickly. Give Israel an absolute blank check to destroy Hamas, which they have every legal and moral right to do. I don't mean every member of Hamas. I mean the military terrorist apparatus of Hamas, which is all they're interested in. They're not trying to kill everybody in Gaza, just the terrorists. And take it from there. But I mean, all you need is leadership. We've seen it before. Everything changed when Roosevelt came in 1933. He gave a great speech, saved the banks, and the whole thing started to come back. Now, you can argue about parts of the New Deal, but that's not the point. The country was moving up and not down. When Reagan came in, even though it was a very difficult time economically, 20% interest rates, double-digit unemployment, double-digit inflation, he got people thinking positively, and the facts followed. I mean, economics is basically half psychology and half grade 3 arithmetic. But if you've got a gloomy, implausible, senescent, sticky-fingered boob as president, you're not going to get great psychology or great arithmetic.
No, I mean,
I hate to be respectful of the holder of a great office. I automatically respect the office of president, but this is an administration must not be reelected for the sake of the world. I'm taking the liberty of speaking for countries outside the U.S., but allied to the U.S. and vitally concerned with what goes on in the U.S. And wishing
I've had a discussion with a young lady in Italy, brilliant, successful woman. And she went on and talked for 30 some minutes about fascism versus communism and Italy and its history, et cetera. Fascinating. And she says at the end, the last minute, she says, and that's why we need Trump. She's in Italy realizing we need Trump. This situation is a nightmare. For Americans, it is. For people like me that are trying to share the truth, it is. But for the whole world, like you said, this is it's a scary time, I think, right now.
We are an alliance. We're all in this together. We're Western civilization. And we have, I mean, the fact is China is very vulnerable and Russia's a paper tiger. It has sophisticated weapons, but as a GDP smaller than Canada, it's not a strong country. It has a shrinking population. They've never had one day of good government. It's a completely corrupt government. They thought that they could take over Ukraine in 3 weeks. And as long as we arm the Ukrainians, they can't do it, even though it's a much bigger and more populous country. All the advantages are with the West, but we're being run into the ditch by this ragtag of ridiculous dictators and stupid countries. I don't mean there's anything wrong with the populations, but Iran and North Korea are ridiculous regimes. And behind it all is China, which has a lot of vulnerabilities. But you remember about within 1 month of Donald Trump being inaugurated, all that talk about how China's going to pass the U.S. as the world's greatest economy had stopped. And despite all of incompetence of Biden, it hasn't come back. I mean, China has terrible problems.
But I was in Hong Kong.
4 years of Biden, and you and I will be marched at bayonet point to Berlitz to start learning Chinese.
I agree. I was in Hong Kong. You don't either. Me neither. I was in Hong Kong when Trump took power and became president, and I could see the economy change. And I would go into China, and I could physically see this. A lot of business was coming into Hong Kong before Trump. It slowed down. I had a guy that I knew, a friend of mine. He was running a plant in just across the border in Hong Kong, or out. So he was working in Shenzhen area in China, and he had a 5,000-man plant. They were moving it, and because Trump said, "Remember, move your plants out of China. If they're not going to play by the rules, move it." And he tried to get a plant down in Vietnam, and they couldn't find land. They had to end up moving to Thailand because all these companies were leaving China. And I had another friend who was a CEO at a bank or at an insurance company. I actually went out with a couple of other CEOs. They all agreed in about 2018, the economy's terrible. And now we've seen this big economy of theirs that was built around real estate and property, and that's just fallen apart too. You're right, China. I think you're right. Our media never talks about it.
Well, as a development story, it's a magnificent story. I mean, a very backward country economically, pulling itself together quickly, magnificent, no question. But as a rival to the United States, not for the next 50 years at least. I mean, it's a house of cards. You know, they've got these abandoned cities they built. There's debt everywhere. On election night 2016, I had this hilarious thing. One of the networks here in Canada was scrambling around figuring they had to have a commentator who was pro-Trump, you see. So they thought of me. Now, look, in fact, is in Canada, everybody who watches an American election, we get American television, so you watch it on an American network, you see. I mean, you'd have to be out of your mind to watch it on a Canadian network. So, you know, the American networks had bureaus in Washington and all around the country and everything. So, but the Canadian networks have to cover it. You know, they can't just pretend it's not happening. So I went on as the pro-Trump guy, you see, and everyone thought it was hilarious at the beginning as the polls were closing when I said I didn't think Trump would win the popular vote, but I thought he would win the electoral vote. And then, of course, that's what happened. And then as the whole Hillary Clinton campaign went down, about 2 a.m, we were getting these absolutely shell-shocked liberal commentators saying, well, this is going to bring on a worldwide depression. It's going to be a terrible disaster. And just before Trump spoke, you know, very graciously acknowledging victory, the Hong Kong Stock Exchange opened, and they reported it was up 200 points
loaded
in the first hour. It was just a hilarious evening. My wife recorded the whole thing. We watch it occasionally. It's just a little comedy out of it, you know?
It's fun to watch. I know what you mean. Mm. I was in Australia. I was at a board meeting like the next day, and I brought this flag with me. It was a Make America Great Again. And the COO from Canada actually said, Joe, do you got anything? I had this flag. We put it above the table, the boardroom where we were having dinner. And as everybody walked in, they see Make America Great Again flag. That thing lasted about 5 minutes. I had to take it down, but it was worth it every second. I think I was about the only pro-Trump
in the world,
guy there.
In the world generally, I think that there would be a much more enthusiastic reception of Trump this election night than there was in 2016. I mean, yeah, in those days, there were a lot of people who thought he was, not for real, you know, but we had him for 5 years. He ended unemployment. He ended oil imports. Inflation never got above 1.5%. He cooled out North Korea. He got everything clicking. He's a strange cat, and I've known him a long time. And he's a great comedian, comedic character, he's a very flamboyant man, forensically. But he is a very sharp, tough executive. He's decisive and he's insightful.
Absolutely. Energy independence was a big thing, too. And now we're seeing Trump mentioned today, $7 gas a gallon in California.
$7
right
gas.
Now.
You run down 60% of the naval oil reserve, you know, the petroleum reserve. Yeah. So, you know, if you're in a crisis, the aircraft carriers have nuclear power and the big submarines do, but the smaller ships you're going to have trouble fueling them. And this whole green thing is completely out of control. But never mind. Fortunately, try as they might, they're going to have to face the people in 6 months.
Yeah. And I'm really praying that we can have a free and fair election. We do that, I think Trump's going to walk away with it. Like I think he walked away in 2020. Personally, I'm biased, but I've looked at this. These numbers are outrageous. It's scary. I guess this is the only thing the Dems think they got is these court cases. And they're pushing them, and they're terrible.
Anarchy on that. I think they're placing everything on their ability to steal it on the day. You know, you know, just to send that army of AFL-CIO people out, round up all the ballots, and you know, write Biden's name and stuff them in the Dropbox.
I agree. And they're coming out. Right. Absolutely. I mean, we saw that. We saw that in all these major states, vans pulling up in the middle of the night and nothing happened. No, nobody was indicted. Nobody was investigated. Real sad situation for America. We've got to get this fixed this time because we can't, this world can't make it. But if this United States goes down, it's going to be a sad situation.
Look, if in Britain or Canada or Germany or even Italy, If in the last 6 months before an election, the leader of the opposition was indicted on nonsensical charges, I mean, in some of those countries, it would be a revolution. I mean, the French and Italians would just blow up. They like revolutions anyway. But even the British and the Germans, who don't like revolutions, they wouldn't stand. They'd say, and they certainly wouldn't in Canada. I mean, Canada is not a terribly demonstrative country. But if the government here tried any stunt like that, indicting the leader of the opposition on this utter foolishness, they'd literally half of the constituents of every member of parliament would order their MP to move it, to remove the prime minister, and it would happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Lord Black, it's been such an honor to meet you. It's been wonderful to talk to you. You're brilliant, man. Would love to have you come back anytime. Lots going on. Hopefully we can do that.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. I hope I haven't been too, declarative here.
No. Fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you so much. God bless. And we hope to see you again soon. Okay.